Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Chris Mim, Managing Director of Strategic Issues at the U.S. Government Accountability Office. So, Chris, I talk to many of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnership among agencies, branches of government, and with the private sector to achieve mission results. How are you folks at GAO using partnerships to improve management operations?
I think the key way that we're doing is that we're making sure that we work very closely with our colleagues in the broader accountability community. And I mentioned a few moments ago that as the Recovery Act is a good example there of where we've been, where we worked with state auditors and local auditors to make sure that we were smart there. That model is something that's and IGs. That model is something that we've been able to use in a variety of different areas. We now have one of the things I'm most excited about. We now have a pilot program that we're working on with ourselves and GAO, reaching out to some IGs, but primarily state and local auditors, to say, let's look at the array of programs at the federal, state, and local level that are targeted to providing rental assistance, for example, to poor people. And how does that look from the standpoint of the service recipient? Is it all coordinated? Does it overlap? Is it fragmented? Is it duplicative? In the old days, meaning just probably a year or 2 years ago, GAO would have gone in and we would have looked at it only through the federal lens, and the state auditor perhaps only through the state lens, and the local auditor only through the local lens. And we would have given nodding acknowledgement, oh, but there are other programs involved in this. What this pilot is designed to do is we're getting together people and saying, let's get a consolidated and consistent methodology on this. We'll all report in our own ways and our own timeframes on this, but let's look at this as a holistic issue because it is a holistic problem. We're also seeing that, and this is something I'm equally excited about, at the international level. GAO and its counterparts in national audit offices, which by the way, we go by the wonderfully self-important term of supreme audit institutions. And so I want you to acknowledge that you're no longer not only talking to a guest from the GAO, but from the supreme audit institution of the United States. Our counterparts in other SAIs and in supreme audit institutions, we have found that there's a variety of issues, obviously climate change being a huge one on this, but anti-corruption and money laundering, in which the response to the financial crisis and making sure that we collectively know about the various regulatory reforms that are being made in our countries, where we need to work much, much more closely together, with each other and share best practices, share audit strategies and audit programs on this. At the end of the day, what this all gets back to is those challenges that I was talking about at the outset, is that if we're serious about we're in an era of complexity and these kind of wicked problems, we as auditors have a responsibility to make sure that our efforts are effectively coordinated and that we're able to address those wicked problems from all the multiple dimensions they have.
And I'd like to follow up, because one of the questions I had was how, if government agencies need to change the way they do business, I'd like to know how audit agencies need to change the way they do business in order to meet the governance challenges of the 21st century.
And that's that evolution of performance auditing that I was mentioning. I was very honored to, back in September of 2013, to be invited to the European Parliament in Brussels to actually testify on this. And I think I was certainly the first GAO person to testify in front of a committee of the European Parliament. And and I don't think too many other federal people had done that, U.S. government. What they were asking about is how we're evolving our performance auditing to respond to this era of complexity. I mentioned earlier kind of the four great trends that they see themselves in Europe as confronting. If you're going to have multipolarity and multi-actors and multi-level and multi-tech, a traditional or exclusive focus of starting from a single program, asking about its inputs and resources, asking about the outputs that it has, and then trying to make a judgment about its influence on outcomes is not going to be the way to do it. A lot of our work is going to continue to be that way because it's very valuable. Increasingly, and this is what that overlap and duplication work, that's the insight that it gives us. If you begin to start defining the problem and working back from that, it opens up whole new avenues issues and thinking about, geez, this is, it's a different type of problem than we thought, or the problem is far bigger than we thought, and therefore, and it also opens up different solutions than we may have thought before. That's what's exciting about the overlap and duplication work, the high-risk work. That's what's exciting about the evolution we're seeing in performance audit.
It really does test your assumptions when you look at it from the problem forward rather right. than from. So I was wondering, in an era of fiscal constraints, it's critical that agency leaders act with strategic intent to keep their workforce motivated to meet mission. Reflecting on your leadership at GAO, would you tell us how you continue to keep your employees focused and motivated in an era of dramatic and sometimes painful changes?
I think the big thing is, and we've done this when we look at other organizations, is we try and make sure that we create and maintain what we call a line of sight. And that is that we have found time and time again, and certainly our personal experience I'm sure validates that as well, is that in any of your listeners, that we're going to be most engaged, most successful, most thoughtful, most energetic to the extent that we have a clear line of sight that is a direct understanding about how what we're working on in a day-to-day basis leads to something big, important, demonstrable improvements for our fellow citizens. Our own individual task may be particularly mundane, you know, and maybe, you know, it may be small and you know, and difficult and hard, but you're going to be really juiced to the extent that you have an understanding of this is big and important. And so we focus, you know, we make sure that, you know, we do audits, we do engagements, we issue reports and all that. And that's, you know, that's the unit of analysis on how we do our work. At the end of the day, though, we want our colleagues to understand that that's not what we're paid to do, is issue reports. We're paid to issue, you know, we're in the business of instrumental knowledge. We're paid to do work that decision makers use to make decisions. We track very carefully how decision makers use our work. Last year, we had over $51 billion in financial accomplishments associated with GAO's work. That's a 105-to-1 return on investment for the investment in GAO. We had over 1,400 other benefits and management improvements that were taken because of our work. We track that very carefully because it's important that, you know, that we have good goals and that we're transparent on our performance, but because also that creates the line of sight. We talk about, when we're doing a job, what's the opportunity for financial accomplishments? What's the opportunity for other benefits that may happen from here? How will decision makers use this information? I find that to be absolutely, you know, critical for you know, my colleagues. That's how we keep people motivated and engaged.
I'd like to turn to the future, Chris. What do you think are some of the major opportunities and challenges your organization is going to face? And how do you think your agency will evolve to meet these challenges and seize these opportunities? What is the future like?
I think one of the big challenges that we have in GAO, and that, you know, certainly that we're tackling, you know, very hard, and we're working very hard on, one is that I alluded to or mentioned at the outset, is making sure that we don't have expectations gaps, and that is the supply-demand imbalance. The Comptroller General has been very, very clear to us in GAO, certainly talking externally and certainly talking to our clients on the Hill, is that to the extent that there are you know, budget concerns with GAO, and we're part of the government, so we, you know, have to, you know, take our share of the challenges associated with that, we will do fewer jobs rather than reduce the quality of those jobs. Quality will be the non-negotiable on that, and there won't be kind of A-level reports versus B-level reports or C-level. I mean, there is a GAO brand. We are going to keep that, and so, you know, there may be fewer of them, but when Congress gets it, they can be just as assured that it is right and objective and fact-based as they could have 10 years ago, as they will 10 years from now. And so but that requires, you know, some careful negotiations and discussions with Congress to make sure that we understand their priorities, understand what needs to come first in terms of when they're asking for work from us. The second thing, and it's related to that, and that is that, as I mentioned, the speed of decision making, is that, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, the chief operating officer and my boss, Patricia Dalton, talks about the kind of the four rights that we have, and when we're thinking in terms of engagements, is that we need to make sure that the work that we're doing is sufficient to answer the question that we're being asked, not more than that, so that we get the information to the decision makers in the timing and the format in which they need that that decision. A beautiful, well-written, well-crafted report, you know, that comes in one day after the decision was made is a historical document which may have been fun to work on, but that's not why you and any of the listeners pay taxes, you know, so that I and my colleagues can have fun. We need to, as I mentioned, if we're in the business of instrumental knowledge, we need to get that information to them in a timing and format that meets their needs. With the speed of decision-making, social media and all the rest, it gets to be, you know, we need to look for ways to radically streamline how we get out our information and, you know, not just cut off a day here or there, but cut off months in some cases. Some jobs are going to take a very long time and for all the right reasons, you know, and we like to say there's nothing wrong with a long job. It's just a long job that wasn't planned to be a long job. That's the problem. So some of them are going to take a long time, but not they all don't have to. And so we need to think of ways in which we can really radically streamline. We have a big initiative underway in GAO that's designed to get at exactly that.
Wow. Well, Chris, I'd like to get your advice. What advice would you give someone who's thinking about a career in public service?
I came in 30 years ago to GAO. Like many people at that point, I came in thinking that, geez, I'll spend the first couple of years, you know, deciding what I want to do for a living and then, you know, go off and do that. You know, when I was describing 30 years ago to friends that right as I'd got out of grad school what I did for a living, they said, it sounds like you get paid to write term papers. And I said, well, you know, maybe, but it also people have to actually act based on your term papers. I can tell you, Michael, in those 30 years, I have not seriously been tempted once to go elsewhere. And the reason for that is a couple of things. One is mission. You know, it's, you know, obviously I'm a GAO guy, so I most focus on that. But I think just more largely the mission of the public service generally. And public service also has broader boundaries, if everything's boundary standing, broader boundaries than it did when, you know, perhaps when I was coming up, you know, that there are people that are making fundamental contributions, obviously, to the public sector that do not work in government or public service, rather, that aren't in government. So I'm not necessarily talking exclusively about government. But the opportunity to return value to citizens, and this gets back to why we measure, to see why we do that. I don't, and my colleagues, you know, we don't have to doubt if we're making a difference. We track that, and we look very carefully of it, you know, to make sure that we are. That's, you know, really motivating. The second thing, and you know, this is a, you know, a little bit selfish in the sense that what is wonderful about GAO is the quality of the colleagues that I have. I mean, I count myself very, very fortunate that, you know, every single day I can participate in any number of internal meetings and external meetings with people from agencies and OMB. So I know it's the same places and elsewhere and people up on the Hill, and just get blown away by the diversity of perspectives and backgrounds and experiences and intelligence that people bring to issues. And so in that regard, I can't think of a more richly rewarding career than being able to work with a bunch of very, very smart people with incredible backgrounds, incredible perspectives and experiences tackling very, very difficult issues. I mean, that's what makes all the Fed bashing and all that stuff, you know, kind of tolerable. I mean, it's, you know, that will ebb and flow, but it's the ability to work with great people on great issues. That's the important thing.
Well, I found our conversation richly rewarding myself, and I want to thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure having you join us. But more importantly, Chris, I'd like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, thank you. It's a great honor to be here, and I, like many other people, I read the IBM work all the time and have the benefit of learning quite a bit from it. And so thank you for that.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Chris Mim, Managing Director of Strategic Issues at the U.S. Government Accountability Office. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.